Dozens of demonstrators chanting "Home is here." They arrived in Washington, D.C. yesterday after a 230-mile march that began in New York last month, walking for weeks to support DACA recipients. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program faces a big Supreme Court test this week. Oral arguments set for tomorrow. We'll dive into that in a few minutes with our legal Jessica Levinson. First, though, let's talk with one of the people who participated in that march. Mariana Magana joins me now from Washington. She's a DACA recipient from Los Angeles, and she marched the entire 230 miles. Hello.
Hello.
So what was that march like for you?
Definitely physically and mentally draining, to say the least. When I was approached, you know, and informed about, you know, whether I wanted to join this 230-mile march from New York to D.C., I kind of questioned whether that was a sacrifice that I wanted to take. But then I just thought about the sacrifice that our families have made in coming into this country, you know, leaving the known into the unknown. And I think I found my answer right away. And so the march was, you know, full 17 days of walking, many beautiful moments with other folks, other marchers. And, you know, we also encounter some hecklers here and there. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, our goal was to get to the Supreme Court. We made it here yesterday. And now we're just excited, anxious, and hopeful for the hearing tomorrow.
Right. So tell me more about the hecklers. What were they saying to you?
You know, the typical comments that you hear on TV. I think what's very interesting to note is that as we were marching through various states, as soon as some folks found out that it was a march about immigration, folks who were against that, right, they automatically tied the march to Trump. So just the concept of immigration alone, the comments that were yelled back at us, for example, would be like Trump 2020, build the wall, get a green card, nothing we haven't heard before, right? It's a lot of the rhetoric that was spewed by this president during his campaign, his initial campaign. It's being spewed today. But we just thought how it was very interesting that the connection right away was made with this current president.
So it was about 30 of you who walked the entire 230 miles, 18
yes.
days worth of walking. And will you all be inside the courtroom tomorrow?
I don't know exactly who will be inside. I know that some of them will be joining outside because there is a huge rally that's expected to happen with folks that are coming in from other parts of the country as well, and mainly DACA recipients to be outside and rally in support of our community.
But you'll be inside?
Yes.
And why is it important for you to be inside the courtroom tomorrow?
So I think it's very important because, you know, often the conversation around DACA revolves around the economic contributions, the success stories, the dreamer narrative. But I think at the end of the day, right, the attorneys will take lead in addressing the legal arguments and legal questions. But the judges are human. And so we hope that by having DACA recipients in the audience, the judges are also able to acknowledge and see the humanity that we have and acknowledge us as human beings first and foremost before having the conversation about economic contributions and anything else that we bring into this country.
Tell me a little bit more about you and your family. And I understand you were born in Mexico. When did you mm-hmm. come here? How old were you?
So I was born in Mexico, and I came to the United States when I was 1 year old. I was actually raised in LA County, but specifically in the city of Santa Monica. That is still my home at the moment. I went to school there. I went to college in the LA area, and I work in the LA area. And so, you know, the central basis of this campaign is to remind folks that our home is here. My home is here in LA, and it is what I know the most and what is dear to my heart. And so I hope that we are very hopeful that the Supreme Court is on the right side of history and reminds this country that DACA folks' home is here in the United States.
So your parents came here, crossed the border illegally, right? And they are still undocumented?
So I will not be talking about my parents.
Okay. And what about your siblings?
My siblings, one is a DACA recipient and one is a U.S. citizen.
So did you, when you were growing up, did you understand your status, your immigration status?
I've always known I was undocumented. Obviously, I didn't understand the consequences and the legal aspects of it until I graduated from high school and saw the limitations of what it meant to not have a Social Security number. Obviously, that changed, right, when DACA was announced and I applied and obtained DACA. But I always grew up knowing about my status.
So tell me about that moment when President Obama announced DACA. It was 2012. How old were you, and when did you find out about it, and what did it mean for you?
When President Obama announced DACA, I had just graduated from high school. I was still 17 years old, and it was actually a day after my graduation. And I didn't really know what it meant right in that moment. I had done some work in immigration rights, specifically with undocumented students. So I was a bit cynical when I first heard about it because we had seen the DREAM Act fell in 2010. But when I realized what it was, right, and the relief that it would afford some of us for 2 years, I was excited. But at the same time, I think I was also a little heartbroken to see that it only applied to a very small portion of our community. And many, many other folks, including the 11 million undocumented folks, were not included in the DACA program.
So when you got your status, you could work, obviously. You could get a driver's license. How else did it change your life?
Well, you know, when I came to this country and growing up in this country, right, you know, a lot of the times immigrant families are just trying to have basic survival, right, you know, have food on the table, make sure that there's a roof over our head. But essentially what DACA allowed me to do is to start thriving in this country, you know, where I was able to go to college. I was able to work while in college to pay for some of my books, my tuition. But then essentially after graduating from college, I was able to apply to, you know, other sorts of programs that require Social Security numbers to expose me to other forms of opportunities that I probably would not have had I not had DACA.
So what happens if your side loses before the Supreme Court and deportation orders are basically carried out? What then?
Well, we don't know that that's going to happen, right? That's speculation that, you know, all the DACA recipients would be like rounded up and deported. Obviously, we have those conversations as to, you know, what could happen next if DHS starts, you know, to want to use that information for purposes that we did not give them that information for. But that's why it's also important for us to have those conversations with Congress and Congress members who also have some form of oversight over that agency.
So you're hoping to find some kind of more permanent, more viable solution through Congress if the courts don't rule in your favor.
Yes.
All right. Well, it's been great speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Mariana Magana. She's a DACA recipient. She's in Washington ahead of tomorrow's Supreme Court arguments.